Good evening. Welcome to the program. My name is Mike Malloy, and I was just taking a look at a report that the Justice Department Office of Professional Responsibility, which is an internal ethics unit, is likely to ask for regarding the Bush crime family lawyers who wrote secret memoranda authorizing torture. We'll get to that a little bit later. Oh, my goodness. Let me just say that the penalty would be about the same as if they were caught shoplifting. Seriously. What do we got? Oh, tonight, coming up here at the bottom of the hour, we're going to play for you episode 4 of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. And if you miss it, well, if you miss it, you wouldn't be hearing me say that. Well, we'll be playing it again, I think, around 11:30. During the third hour tonight. It is 8 past 9 here in the East. So make the proper adjustments depending on what time. Oh, never mind. Jesus, it's not going to be one of those nights, is it? Anyway, in about half an hour, we're going to play Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe Episode 4, written and produced by Bob Alexander and presented by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. So stick around for that. Got to mention Limbaugh. Kathy wrote about Limbaugh on the live blog that you see at MikeMalloy.com every day. She writes that. Kathy writes that. And I keep saying, sign it. Nah, I don't want to sign it. This is just, you know, it's just a live blog. Okay. Well, it gets picked up and carried around the net, and people know now that she writes it. So just for the record, Kathy writes the live blog that appears on our website every day on the first page, and I write the one called Mike's Daily Blog. Kathy mentioned today about the pig man, Limbaugh, and the enormous amount of money that he sucks up for being the kind of jerk ball that he is, and how many people at Clear Channel are losing their jobs because of Limbaugh's insatiable hunger for as much as he can get. Now, we know he has that hunger where it concerns drugs and comestibles, but money too, at the expense of other people's jobs. He doesn't give a goddamn. I mean, why should he care, right? But anyway, you might find it interesting. Jack Cafferty, writing his little mini blog at CNN, pointed out today that Rush Limbaugh is now suggesting that Sarah Palin is the most prominent and articulate voice for good old-fashioned American conservatism. You know, Limbaugh cracks me up. I've been aware of him, as has most of America, who is involved in talk radio for probably the past, 23, 24 years. This guy has had a series of living girlfriends and several marriages. He keeps trying. You gotta give him credit for that. He keeps trying to establish his heterosexual cred. He's dated or been married to a series of people, and obviously he's on the prowl again. You could see it at the CPAC convention earlier this year when he was bouncing his boobies up on the podium in his black disco outfit and his slick back hair, you know, as he stood up there and bounced around. Jesus, what a clown. Oh, my God. You know, what's his name? Keith Olbermann refers to him as the comedian Rush Limbaugh, and I guess that's true. He is such a joke. I don't know why I've taken his trash, and hate talk so seriously all these years. I guess because he just turns my stomach. I don't know. But anyway, so Jack Cafferty said today that Limbaugh is now suggesting that Sarah Palin is the most prominent articulate voice for good old fashioned American conservatism. Well, that is because this is not on Cafferty's website. But the reason he's doing that, he wants to get laid. That's all. He wants to get some of Sarah Palin. Like Joe the Plumber, I don't mean he wants to get some of Joe the Plumber. Well, maybe he does. But, you know, Sarah Palin, you got to admit, she's got kind of a male porn star fantasy type school marm glasses, butt kind of thing going for her. And you add the gun and it's just liable to drive some of these right wing Viagra flooded freaks on the right just absolutely insane. I'm talking about Rush. So Rush is looking to get a little. That's all. So he's going to start dangling the bait in front of Sarah Palin, hoping that she'll give him a call and maybe they can get together or not, you know, anyway. So she is now, according to Rush, the most prominent and articulate voice of good old fashioned American conservatism. You know, as Jack Cafferty points out, if you recall the interviews that Palin did with Katie Couric on CBS Evening News during the campaign, prominent and articulate are not the words that immediately pop into a person's head. But, Limbaugh also insists that some Republican leaders hate, despise, and fear Sarah Palin, as well as finding her embarrassing. he's referring to that new group formed by, you know, the National Council for a New America, the bastard stepchild of the Project for a New American Century. Well, the National Council for a New America, it's made of folks like Bush, Jeb Bush, and Mitt Romney, and Piyush Jindal, and John McCain. And they're all working real hard to rebrand the Republican Party. The Republican Party is not the party of horny old white men, most of whom talk like they have a mouthful of grits. No, I ain't right. We're better than that. We're different. We got a big tent. Y'all want to come into our big tent? Come on. The big tent they talk about, of course, is a revival tent for fundamentalist Christianity. But anyway, they're trying to rebrand the Republican Party, the National Council for a New America. Oh, my God. Limbaugh says it's nothing more than an early campaign event being held by a bunch of Republicans who have what Limbaugh calls presidential perspirations. Oh, my God. Anyway, I just find this. I'm beginning to realize that the last refuge for people who feel their sanity is just right on the verge. We've talked about this, you and I. We've talked about this many times, haven't we? Over the years, we've talked about the rage factor, how we're all just exhausted from rage, how we're all just exhausted from the Bush crime family and the wars and the blow up of our economy and now this pig flu and on and on and on and on. Maybe the last refuge of normal people is to fall back into, blood-curdling comedy and just see the whole thing. You know, grab a big tub of popcorn and kick back. If you're an adult over the age of 30, smoke a joint. You know, you young people, stay away from it. It's just going to corrupt your mind. If that's what you do, I'm not advocating it. Oh, Lord, no, not moi. But, you know, sit back with a big slushy and a great big pan of popcorn and watch this madness, right? I mean, who is finding anything that even remotely resembles reality in what's going on out here, especially with the Republicans? What a dog and pony show. It's getting close to being fun. It really is. You know, Piyush, McCain, Jeb, Sarah Palin, Limbaugh, Michael Steele. Oh, my God. Well, and Jack Cafferty on his blog today says, so here's my question to you. Rush Limbaugh says Sarah Palin is the most prominent and articulate voice of conservatism. Is he right? Way to go, Jack. I love Jack Cafferty, man. I just think, you know, when I grow up, I want to be just like Jack Cafferty. I swear to God, I do. All right, we have a break coming up here. We have lots of ground to cover. What is this? Wait a minute. What is this? This is from John in Raleigh. Who cares about Limbaugh? There are more vital issues in Limbaugh. Why are you phoning it in, Mike? Do some goddamn homework for your show, please. Make it worth my time, for God's sake. Hey, John, you see this? Can you count? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
You folks need to stop sending me all these emails about the savage wiener being banned from the UK. It is what I blogged about and posted on my website around 3 o'clock this afternoon. Just go to MikeMalloy.com, and it's right there. So, you know, I keep getting emails. I realize your intentions are good. I'm not, you know, being a nasty ass here. But no more emails about Michael Savage Wiener being banned from the UK. Of course. I mean, what is she, the Home Minister or somebody? I'm not sure which member of the British government said that Savage and former Klans members and racist skinheads and, you know, just a whole list. I think there are 22 people who are banned from traveling to or within the UK. Savage is a punk. That, you know, he really is. But if you want to see my take on it, go to MikeMalloy.com, and it's right there. And immediately under that is Kathy's take on the pig man. So there you have it, a 1-2 punch from the dynamic duo for today. From Prairie 2, our economics correspondent who writes, "Don't let the pig man sneeze on you." The Obama administration, Prairie 2 writes, is dragging its feet on any revelation of the stress test results from the 19 large banks that control more than 2/3 of all banking assets. Rumor is that half of them failed the test and will need substantial new capital to continue operations. In reality, these banks have been insolvent for years and were only propped up by the fiction of debt bubbles created one after another to pad their balance sheets. All of this courtesy of Alan Greenspan and the so-called permanent Republican majority. Fed Chairman Bernanke testified before Congress today that the housing crisis is leveling off, but he said unemployment will continue to rise. No comfort for the people in the mushrooming tent cities who are unable to find work. Experts are predicting at least another 1.5 million homeless people this year, and that number may be optimistic. The failure of Democrats to pass the bankruptcy reform that would have fixed bad mortgages will result in another 8 million foreclosures. Banks are even demolishing homes if municipalities refuse to allow them to abandon them. Oh, by the way, the NAFTA swine flu continues to sap the resources of local health departments, even though it appears for now to not be a very to be very serious of an infection. However, a worker returning from Mexico infected a large swine herd in Canada. The pigs are recovering nicely, but it demonstrates a problem. Now that this virus is able to move freely between humans and the mega-sized corporate pig herds, it can mutate and pick up stray genetic material as it goes back and forth. Viruses, of course, have a relatively tiny genetic makeup and reproduce billions of times in a very short period. There is a real possibility that once set in motion, the virus will eventually acquire the missing protein it needs to make it as lethal as the 1918 flu pandemic that killed between 50 and 100 million people worldwide. Rush Limbaugh is telling all his former Republicans, now Limbots, that this flu pandemic is all hype to make people dependent on the federal government. How did this virus start moving between pigs and man? A missing link in the evolutionary chain, perhaps? How about it, pig man? From Prairie 2. Go to his website, prairie2.com. And I think we're taking comments now at our website. What have we got? How many disgusting hate comments have we gotten from people? I love it. I think what I'm going to do is read some of the comments that develop as a result of today's Savage Wiener a blog that I wrote. Oh, my goodness. We have 8 comments already? Holy Toledo. Look at that. Whoa. Oh, the F word again. Oh, I love this one. I love Michael Savage. Malloy is jealous because no one outside of an asylum or a left-wing student dorm listens to his show because after a full day of working, we're tired. Malloy gets the graveyard shift and does moderately well because he has no competition. put Michael, I guess that's me, on in the afternoon and he will get swiped. Oh, if Mike Malloy hates the USA so much, then come to Canada. I'm not sure what that means. Anyway, check it out. It's more fun reading. I love baiting right-wingers. They're so easy. Oh, my God, they're so easy. It's like the old Tom and Jerry cartoons where, you know, the bulldog Spike is just coming after Tom and just about to rip him to pieces, and all of a sudden Tom goes, stops, and he holds up a bone. And the bulldog, Spike, who just a moment ago was just this ravenous beast, all of a sudden stops. And when Tom holds up the bone, Spike jumps up on his hind legs and starts going, and then Tom throws it, and the dumb dog chases the bone. That's what Republicans are like. You ever knows that?
Here we go now, keep it lowbrow, get stupid, wow. Cause I know how, check my brain in, be an idiot, act lame in, stay ignorant, be remedial, wear the dunce cap, slouch over and drool like a hunchback, don't discuss things, shout the last word, put your good sense out the pasture, drop your IQ, that's what I do, my advice to girls and guys who wanna be a Nobel Prize finalist, rocket scientists, try applying this, keep the customers coming around, if you're smart then you better start dumbing it down. Don't say anything too profound. Dumb it down. I want to hear you.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It is 26 before the hour, and we are just moments away from episode number 4 of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. If you have not heard Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe before, we have a large treat for you here. At least we look at it that way. So without further ado, let us proceed to this week's or this particular edition.
It's time once again for Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe. Tonight's episode, The Fortress of Fox, or The Big Surreal.
Hey, Truth Seekers. Kathy and I had just wrapped up another Mike Malloy Uncensored Mailbag. Never fails to amaze me how these troglodytes manage to misspell words consisting of one syllable. Kathy was rewinding the tape when there was a knock at the door.
Expecting anybody?
Cut the theme music, baby. You're a regular now, and yeah, I got a call earlier today from my snitch at Fox News. He said he couldn't talk about it over the phone, so he was going to drop by. I went over and opened the studio door. My contact was standing there, but not for long. He fell face down onto the floor. I felt for a pulse. I didn't expect to find one. I wasn't disappointed.
Ah, Mike, is he?
Yeah. Dead on arrival.
Who is he?
Elijah Cook Jr. And outside of the Maltese Falcon, I can't remember a movie where he made it alive to the last reel. Poor sap.
What's that paper in his hand?
Let me see. It's a note to me. Malloy, if you're reading this, I'm already dead. Because of budgetary constraints, I don't have any lines. So the only way I can tell you anything is through this crudely done expositional passage. If only more truth seekers would subscribe to your podcasts for only $59.40 a year, which is about 25 cents a show, I might be alive today.
Skip the commercial part. Even though the podcasts are commercial free, what else did he say?
Well, I'm getting to it here. Let's see. This evening, there'll be a meeting of all the affiliates at Fox headquarters, where next month's Republican talking points will be distributed. The lists are in Roger Ailes' office. If you can get them before the indoctrination film ends, you'll be able to, you'll be able.
What? What?
He croaked before he could finish there, Kathy.
Well, shouldn't we call the police?
No time for that, baby. We've got to get down to Fox headquarters and stop them before they release those talking points. Because without them, These jokers won't be able to fill their airtime. Well, with the exception of Glenn Beck, they just spin him around like a top and turn the camera on.
Well, this could be dangerous.
Danger's my middle name, Dollface.
I thought it was Dennis, but how will we get in?
Easy, easy. I'll disguise myself as an idiot, so we'll fit right in. Kathy grabbed the keys. I put on the rubber nose, squirting lapel flower, and the really big clown shoes. We drove over to Fox headquarters, parked, and walked right on in. No problem. My disguise worked perfectly. We blended in with the other clowns. Almost immediately, we were ushered into a large screening room.
Welcome to the testing room of the Parallax
Corporation's
Division of Human
Engineering. Once a month, baby, they re-indoctrinate the affiliates and all Fox employees to keep them on the party line. Mind control, tinfoil hat stuff.
I've always wondered about that. Shiny side in or out?
Shiny side out, always. Quilt it if you can get it. As soon as they dim the lights, we'll get out of here.
Pleasant experience.
We slipped out the door and made our way to Roger Ailes' office. And there, sitting on the desk blotter, were the Republican talking points.
I don't understand. If we take these, why don't they just write them up again?
Well, look at it this way, baby. While most of these people can barely read their teleprompters, none of them can write. They have to wait for Cheney to come out of his bunker. And he does that only once a month during the full moon. Without these talking points, they'll be forced to keep yakking about teabagging until the middle of the summer.
Mike, the door.
Just then, Roger Ailes came into the room. He took one look at us and bellowed in rage. I knew it. I've read about these reptilian shapeshifters. Kathy, get behind me. As Ailes rushed towards us, I distracted him by throwing my clown shoes at him. We barely made it out the door. As we passed the screening room, the Fox employee stumbled out and slowly lurched after us. We easily outran the zombies and jumped in the car. We raced off into the night. Anybody tailing us, baby?
Not yet. Wait, a helicopter's coming straight for us.
Good God, it's Sarah Palin.
Eat hot dirt, don't you?
Mike, look out for the fruit cart.
Why is it always a fruit cart?
Mike, you're hit.
A black hole opened up and I dived in headfirst. Yada yada, Stephen Hawking, yada yada yada. But I had other things on my mind, like this really hurts. I came to in a strange, sepia-tinted room. Where am I? What? Then I saw them. There at the foot of the bed were Ray Bolger, Jack Haley, and Bert Lahr.
Remember me?
Your old pal Hunk?
Me? Hickory? You couldn't forget my face, could you?
Let me out of here! Let me out of here!
Eat hot lead, don't you?
Mike? Mike?
There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
Mike, wake up, Mike.
What?
You were having a nightmare.
It was all a dream?
You were making so much noise you woke up the dog.
The dog. We don't have a dog.
Well, of course we have a dog. What are you talking about? Here, Asta. Come here, boy.
Asta?
Be sure to tune in again next time when Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe, returns from a parallel universe in Death in the Land of the Midnight Sun.
I like that one. I like that one a lot. Tonight's episode, written and produced by Bob Alexander and presented by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. We will play that again, in about, 2 hours? Yeah, 2 hours down the road tonight. So if you are still, tuned in, you can hear it again. I like that. That was a good one. That was a good one. I don't know where he got that Roger Ailes character. Good God. A couple of emails here, from Lauren in, Alberta, Canada. Lauren writes, Mike, naturally the pigs who got swine flu from a farmhand who had been to Mexico, the pigs were, of course, here in Alberta, home of the mad cow. I am so proud to be an Albertan. Lauren, P.S. Ironically, China now refuses to import pork from Canada. That is funny. Ah! And this is not so funny. The Mormons are at it again. You talk about balls. You talk about nerve. You talk about the ability to piss off the rest of the world. Boy, I'll tell you, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints confirmed today that someone improperly, posthumously baptized the late mother of President Barack Obama into the Mormon faith. Now, you know my position on religion, but, even this kind of superstitious hocus pocus nonsense is just irritating, isn't it? Last June 4th, the day after, then Senator Obama secured enough delegates to win the Democratic presidential, to become the Democratic presidential nominee, someone had the president's mother, Stanley Ann Dunham, who died in 1995 of cancer, baptized. And on June 11th, she received what they refer to as the sacrament. The White House had no comment. The baptism and the sacrament appear at familysearch.org, the LDS Church's genealogical site. And it was first reported by John Aravosis at the liberalamericablog.com. The Mormons, however, did have a comment. Mormon Church spokeswoman Kim Farah said that, quote, "The offering of baptism to our deceased ancestors is a sacred practice to us, and it is counter to church policy for a church member to submit names for baptism for persons to whom they are not related. The church is looking into the circumstances of how this happened and does not yet have all the facts. However, this is a serious matter, and we are treating it as such." End quote. Well, what happens if they investigate and say, oops, big mistake? Do they unbaptize her? Can you be unbaptized? Do they take back the water? Or I don't know how they do this with someone who's dead. I don't know. The person who sent me this, was this from Jake Tapper's blog? "To be fair, last year the Mormons were way too busy trying to pass the anti-gay Prop 8 in California to worry about anything as mundane as baptizing the dead mother of the Democratic nominee for president. And any comment from the Catholic Church leaders who cozy up to the Mormons to get money for anti-gay efforts on how they feel about dead Catholics being baptized? This is really very sick and very twisted." No, that part is not from Jake Tapper. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. I bet you I'm gonna be a big star.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. A Spanish judge said today that he is going to ask the Obama administration if there are any plans in the works to investigate the six senior Bush administration officials who were accused of creating a legal framework for torture. And the judge is going to do that, Judge Eloy Velasco, before deciding whether or not to open his own investigation. The judge said Spain can act only if the United States has not conducted a torture investigation of its own and does not plan one. this judge, the Spanish judge, is handling a complaint filed by human rights lawyers under Spain's principle of universal justice. And that principle holds that crimes like terrorism or genocide or torture can be prosecuted in Spain, even if alleged to have been committed abroad. The judge wrote in a five-page ruling this sentence, quote, "As we are in a preliminary phase, it seems more in line with our complex system of universal prosecution to ask the Obama administration what its plans are for the six Bush administration officials named in the complaint, including former U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez." According to this, court prosecutors and the Spanish Attorney General recommended last month against launching such a probe in Spain, saying such a procedure is up to the United States. But this judge, Eloy Velasco, who was assigned the case when the original judge, Baltasar Garzón, handed it back to the court, Velasco has not formally dropped it. Well, I don't know. It's starting to get more and more tangled, and it seems like a relatively simple situation, doesn't it? Does it to you? It does to me. These three attorneys who worked out of the Office of Legal Counsel, who did this. I mean, there's no question that you and Bradbury and Bybee, worked together to, violate the law in a very serious way. There's no question about that. But according to, what is coming out now, the, those lawyers who approved the interrogation techniques of torture, will probably not face any criminal charges. That's according to Justice Department, Barack Obama Justice Department investigators. They put that in a draft report that recommends that two of these three face a possible sanction, their law license. And again, this is what would happen to them if they were caught stealing. If they walked into a Macy's department store and tried to steal a $200 sport coat, and were found guilty, they would, or confessed to being guilty, as these pigs did, and said, no, it's not stealing, it's enhanced removal from the store, they would lose their law licenses. So apparently torture and an attempt to make it torture, and that attempt apparently has succeeded, is as serious to the Obama Justice Department as stealing a $200 sport coat would be. Now, this is not the final word. This is recommendations from the Justice Department investigators. The officials who have conducted this said that they're recommending that John Yoo and Jay Bybee, who is now a federal appeals court judge, be referred to state bar associations in their home states for possible disciplinary action. And about the most that can happen, the most that can happen is they would be disbarred. Now, the person speaking to the Associated Press about this on condition of anonymity because he's not authorized to speak, this person noted that the investigative report was still in draft form and subject to revisions. Attorney General Eric Holder also has the right to make his own determinations about what steps to take once the report has been finalized. And the Justice Department sent a letter, I think, to two senators. I think it was Dick Durbin and Sheldon Whitehouse, that said most of the work on the matter was complete. The letter sent to these senators does not mention the possibility of criminal charges, nor does it name the lawyers under scrutiny. How about that? The letter did not indicate what the findings of the final report would be, but Bybee, you, and Stephen Bradbury are the three that worked in the Office of Legal Counsel and played the key roles in putting together legal justification for torture. Now, when the inquiry neared completion last year, it's not just been completed, it's just the report has been written. But last year, investigators recommended seeking professional sanctions against Bybee and you, but not Bradbury, according to this insider. Those who would those sanctions would come in the form of recommendations to for disbarment for these two. Now, the director of the Center for Constitutional Rights called this decision, his name is Vincent Warren, he called this decision not to seek criminal charges, quote, inconceivable, given all that we know about the twisted logic of these memos, end quote. Vincent Warren argued that the only reason for such a decision, quote, is to provide political cover for people inside the Obama White House so they don't have to pursue what needs to be done, end quote. Yu's lawyer, when asked for a comment, said he signed an agreement with the Justice Department not to discuss this draft report. And a lawyer representing the judge, Bybee, also declined to comment. Jesus, God. So it appears that, you know, once again, just as in the Iran-Contra affair and the providing missiles to Iran and the illegal bombing of Cambodia, these Republican criminal sons of bitches are going to walk free. How about that? Welcome back. 7 past the hour. The Malloy Show, hour two tonight. We have an email here from Mary in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, who understands full well what the Justice Department report, the draft report, is saying. She writes, Mike, well, now we know that it is true that when Nixon said if the president does it, it means it is legal. Today it was decided that Bush will not be charged in the torture mess. The reason why is that of all the people in this country, George W. Bush is not guilty of anything because he said it was okay to torture. All of the rest of the citizenry would be guilty, but not Bush. So much for the no one is above the law except for Bush. I think that wherever that phrase lives in legaldom, it should be modified to say, except for the President of the United States. No one is above the law, except for the President of the United States. I also think we should call the President Your Grace, since he is now obviously royal. Because this precedent now makes us a presidential monarchy and not a republic, like I learned many years ago in school, Obama will now take a hit on this issue because he did not keep his word. I cannot vote for him anymore. I'm sadly disappointed in what I thought was our only hope. Well, you know, Mary, that's the way I feel, too. But maybe that's the reason you and I are not president and attorney general. I don't know anymore. I really don't. I would like to see these people who did this, and not just this, but so many things while they were in office. I'd like to see them literally, perp walked. You know, hands behind their backs, handcuffed, ankle cuffs on with about, 2 feet of chain. So they have to take those little steps, right? Throw a coat over their heads after there has been enough of the photo op to see Cheney and Bush and Gonzalez and you and the rest of these bastards walked out to a Black Mariah and taken to the nearest federal lockup, where they will be held without bond until such time as they're brought to trial. I'd like to see that, too. Trust me, I would. But, you know, sometimes it's either the pragmatist in me or the coward. One of the two. I'm not sure which. I have both. I said before, I'm not afraid of anything. I'm not. But I do have fears. And So I guess that's what the coward inside of me would relate to, the fear. So it's either the pragmatist or the coward inside old Mike Malloy that would say, okay, maybe we should move on. Because if we do put these sons of bitches on trial, or even begin a deep investigation of them, and by these sons of bitches, I mean everyone who is connected with the Bush crime family that could be investigated for crimes against the state. I'm sorry, crimes against the Constitution. Of course they committed crimes against the state. They have no respect for the United States. Vis-a-vis Bush's infamous statement, the Constitution is nothing but a, quote, goddamn piece of paper, end quote. So crimes against the Constitution, if not a criminal probe, as it were, I would like to see impeachment proceedings proceed. Impeachment proceedings could proceed, even though the bastard is out of office and his criminals. But the coward or the pragmatist inside me says, and agrees with whoever it was that said, I think it was Thomas Friedman in the New York Times the other day, that such action would rip the country apart. Now, he was immediately taken to task for saying that. And I can understand Friedman's point of view and also understand the people taken to task. That's where I sit, right on the fence. Yes, I want them prosecuted. No, I don't want the country to go into convulsions. So what to do, what to do, what to do? If we were talking about honorable men instead of criminals, perhaps they would step forward and say, look, we are guilty. Mea culpa. We, you know, some enterprising person, maybe a professor at a university that teaches American history or teaches government or teaches constitutional law, could convene a forum of some sort in a very public auditorium and invite these people, these Bush crime family members, to show up and simply accept responsibility for what they did, with the full understanding that such declarations in public would result in no legal, criminal, civil, any sorts of charges filed against them ever, or their assigns or offspring, even unto the 100th generation, just to clear the record, just so these people would step forward and say, yes, this is what we did. Now, they could go ahead and give their reasons. Oh, that's where it breaks down. Yeah, okay. Because the reasons would be the reasons of people who were mentally ill. Don't forget who it was that told George W. Bush to invade Afghanistan and Iraq. All right, never mind. Never mind. Now, regarding this report that is coming out, the Washington Post is reporting that former Bush administration officials have been lobbying like crazy behind the scenes to urge the Justice Department to soften this report, criticizing the lawyers who put this all together. That's according to the Washington Post, says two sources familiar with these efforts. The Post says, in recent days, attorneys for the subjects of the ethics probe have encouraged senior Bush administration appointees to write and phone Justice Department officials and plead their case. Well, the subjects of the ethics probe, we know who they are. They are a federal appeals court judge. Is this son of a bitch Jay Bybee going to stay on the bench now? Is he going to listen to appeals of people who have been convicted of what? Well, we know one thing. If a case comes before this bastard regarding torture, we know that Jay Bybee will have to either recuse himself or dismiss the charges or rule in favor of the torturer, right? To do otherwise would be to declare himself guilty. As far as John Yoo is concerned, a law professor in Southern California, who is going to attend his class? What sort of questions would the students ask? We know that grade schoolers are asking the shoe lady, Condoleezza Rice, why she participated in decisions to to torture people. We have grade school children asking those questions. Can you imagine students in constitutional law asking Professor John Yoo questions about his decision to totally subvert domestic law, international law, treaties, and the Constitution to not to get actionable intelligence, but to force fake confessions from cab drivers and fruit market sellers and opium dealers and, you know, unbelievable. The draft report, we'll see if it comes out. We don't even know if the Obama administration is going to release it. Apparently it's 200 pages or more. It was prepared in January before Bush's departure. Everyone has seen it. The principals have seen it, the ones being investigated. The CIA saw it. Everybody saw it. It's been handed around to everybody inside. I mean, this is incredible stuff, isn't it? This is like investigating a murder scene, and before the evidence is presented to a grand jury, the suspected perpetrators are brought in, and they're saying, okay, here's what we've discovered. Take a look at all. Of course, once they've been indicted and are on trial, such a thing does occur. It's called discovery. Yes, okay. But before any indictments or any sort of action is taken against the alleged perpetrators of this murder, they are offered a chance to see everything that has been investigated. And here's where it differs from a murder case, they have the right to alter some of the findings, to enhance some of the findings.
And so, become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their fathers hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your...
Truth Seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Now, how bad, let's see, what have we covered so far tonight? Torture and a few odds and ends. How bad is it getting where it concerns Afghanistan and Pakistan? You want to know how bad it's getting? Don't forget that this president is committing another 22,000 troops there, and that's just the beginning. Afghanistan is the Pashto word for Vietnam, I understand, but this is how bad it's getting. The holdover defense secretary from the Bush crime family, Robert Gates, flew to Saudi Arabia today to seek help from the Saudis in stopping the Taliban advances in Pakistan. Advances that Robert Gates told the Saudis threaten the very existence of the government in Islamabad, as if the Saudis gave a damn. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, isn't it the Saudi royal family that provides the funding for the madrasas, the ultra-conservative Islamic schools in Afghanistan and Pakistan, that turn out people who, just like fundamentalist Christians in this country, hate anyone who does not agree with their literal interpretation of the Quran, just like fundamentalist Christians in this country hate, although they pretend they don't, anyone who doesn't accept the literal, inerrant translation interpretation of the Bible. up to and including the subjugation of women in both religions, the belief that slaughtering the other is perfectly acceptable because, after all, God ordered it many times. The God of Abraham, which is the same God of the Muslims and the Christians, the fundamentalists. So, but going to the Saudis, you see, Robert Gates said that Saudi Arabia, quote, clearly has a lot of influence throughout the region, end quote. And he cited Saudi Arabia's, quote, longstanding and close relationship with Pakistan, end quote. Secretary Gates surely understands. I mean, who am I to suggest to Defense Secretary Robert Gates anything on the global stage? These people are much smarter than I. But surely Defense Secretary Robert Gates understands that the influence the Saudis have in that part of the world is the influence of an instigator, is the influence of religious fanatics who don't want to get their own people involved in these acts, but are willing to fund faraway schools that will turn out other people who will strap explosives to their bodies and seek revenge. Now, I know what you're thinking, but Mike, 15 of the 19 bombers who came to this country, according to the Bush crime family, were Saudis. Possibly. I'm Irish and Italian. That doesn't really mean anything. I mean, if I were to commit some act of violence, I don't think that necessarily that people would say, well, look what Ireland or Italy turns out. You get my point. So the Saudis are known for their cowardice and their laziness. They are. Known by who, Malloy? Known by, remember the first Gulf War, the one that George Herbert Walker Bush got us involved in after his diplomat, April Glaspie, made it very clear to Saddam Hussein that the United States really doesn't give that much of a damn about disputes, especially territorial disputes between Arab countries. Number of reasons for that. First of all, those territorial boundaries are all made up. They were made up by Western powers after the breakup of the Ottoman Empire. They don't mean anything. And if you remember, the first Gulf War was not about liberating the Iraqi people. The first Gulf War was about a claim by Kuwait that Saddam was slant drilling into their territory. Of course, Kuwait used to be a province of Iraq, yada, yada, yada. Iraq really didn't exist. It was called something else. What was it called? Mesopotamia, the Garden of Eden, Hellville. I mean, who knows? Who cares? But during that war, especially the lead up to that invasion, that first invasion, the Saudi manhood all left. All the young princes, and there are hundreds of them apparently, they all left. They all went to Cairo for the duration, or Paris, or Rome, where they rented huge villas because we, the people of the United States, were so willing to spend billions upon billions upon billions of dollars with the Saudi sheikhs where it concerns oil. So young Saudi manhood would have none of this, even though we have sent the Saudis billions upon billions of dollars worth of weaponry. Of course, that's just to satisfy the U.S. weapons industry. The Saudis don't give a goddamn about, well, go to war? Are you out of your mind? We want to sit around the pool and eat dates. And maybe even talk to them. But anyway, they all took off, didn't they? The Saudis, those brave young men that Secretary Gates now turns to for advice?
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So it is a little worrisome to me. I don't know. Maybe there's no reason to worry. Maybe it's all just drama, melodrama, and theater. The only people who are going to die are innocent civilians in some other part of the world, and are people who join, for the most part, join the U.S. military because they do feel that such action is patriotic. And everybody else will just, we'll discuss whether or not photographers can take pictures of the returning flag-draped coffins. It's astonishing to me, is it not to you, that here we are at the beginning of the 21st century, well, actually at the beginning of about the next phase of 100,000 years of human thinking, human development, and we're still picking up clubs and invading the cave down the ravine and beating the heads of the prehumans that live there. I mean, it's crazy. It's just crazy. It's just crazy. It's absolutely, it's madness. It's just madness. It's what Colonel Kurt said. It's madness. Absolute insanity. But we're going to do it anyway, you see, because we are a species that is able to drive itself insane with its own actions. That's one of the intriguing things I think about human beings. We're about the only species that can do that, right? Well, of course, Mike, we're the only ones that are self-aware. Not necessarily so. It's turning out there are lots of species that are self-aware. But we seem to be able to keep doing those things that guaranteed death, disaster, disease, poverty, hunger, horror, terror. And we do it. We justify it, too, don't we? Yeah, we justify it. We justify it because our interests are being threatened or, I don't know. It's just crazy. So to add craziness to the craziness, our defense secretary makes a trip over to Saudi Arabia to ask for help. Ask for help. This is the way the Times reports that Gates concluded talks in Egypt earlier Tuesday. And the shadow of Iran's regional ambitions. Do you like that? The shadow of Iran's regional ambitions prompted the defense secretary to declare that efforts by the Obama administration to seek better ties with Iran would not jeopardize its relations with allies in the region. Ooh, who would that be? Let me think. Israel! He stressed, Gates did, that historic American partners in the Middle East would be kept fully informed of Washington's diplomatic efforts towards Iran. Now, of course, we have one partner in the Middle East that doesn't need to be kept fully informed because they know stuff before Gates knows it. That would be Israel, through its agents in AIPAC and in the government, our government. And I guess in a sense you can't blame them. You know, they need to know because Israel, when it was founded, decided to make its home not just in Palestine, but to make its political home on the back of a very hungry tiger, the United States. So who can blame Israel for wanting to know at all times what the tiger is thinking, doing, feeling, or planning? Because the tiger could turn on Israel in a heartbeat, just like the tiger told the Jews 80 years ago to go die. You remember that? Well, you don't remember it, but you remember reading about it. Yeah, Roosevelt and just all the way down the list. You know, boatloads of Jews seeking life as opposed to torture and death. We're told to, sorry, can't land here. Couldn't go to Havana. Couldn't go to Savannah. Couldn't go to Norfolk. Couldn't go to Charleston. Couldn't go to New York. Had to go home. Had to go back to Germany. So that's the reason, if one needs an explanation, obviously we don't. That's the reason that the Israelis keep very close tabs on what the United States government and military and intelligence services are doing. And to the extent that they can, they influence the behavior of the United States in the Middle East. Our other allies, can you imagine if a Jordanian or an Egyptian would, or if Americans were discovered feeding information to Jordan or Lebanon, or Egypt, one of which is a monarchy. The other is held together by spit and string, coalition of governing parties. And the third, of course, is an absolute military dictatorship. That would be Egypt, to whom we provide either the second most or the third most amount of foreign aid, and have since the handshake between Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin. That's how long ago that was, right? So, anyway, Secretary Gates stressed that historic American partners in the Middle East would be kept fully informed of our diplomatic efforts toward Iran. And, you know, the Netanyahu's government just, you know, the Likudniks sit there and go, oh gee, thanks. Yeah, all right, you do that, Gates. Yeah, keep us informed. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like I said, they know stuff before Gates knows it. But anyway, Gates said regarding Iran that the Obama administration was undertaking an effort to reach out to Iran with its eyes wide open. And that just makes me think of that Tom Cruise film, Eyes Wide Shut. I don't know. Well, actually, it was, who is the director? The one that did, Kubrick, right. Eyes Wide Shut. Gates said, quote, if we encounter a closed fist when we extend an open hand. Now, see, that's plagiarism. That's right out of Barack Obama's inauguration speech, isn't it? If we encounter a closed fist when we extend our open hand, then we will react accordingly. Okay. He added, concerns out here of some kind of grand bargain developed in secret are completely unrealistic and I would say are not going to happen. I'm not sure what he means by that, a grand bargain developed in secret. But the Israelis knew that weeks ago. If Gates knew it yesterday, the Israelis, Netanyahu knew it back in, what, March? God. Oh, my goodness. So, anyway. That just caught my eye. I just found it just stunning, stunning. New York Times website that Secretary Robert Gates was going to the Saudis to ask for assistance. Now, maybe not. Maybe that's just the cover story. But isn't that the Saudis who would love to see the absolute failure of any kind of non-religious government in any place east of them? East of them. The Saudis are, and the failure of any Shia government. The Saudis, of course, are Sunnis. And they just simply don't want, they don't want to see these Shia trash, which is what they are to the Sunnis, succeed anywhere. They want a nice, religious, theocratic, all the women in burqas, except the ones here in Riyadh, because we like to look at them. So our defense secretary sits down with the Saudis to work all this stuff out. The Saudis who hire people to do their wars. The last hire was us. We usually get that job to go fight whoever is bugging Saudi Arabia. And have you ever noticed how quiet it is between Israel and Saudi Arabia? Huh? You notice that? Just nothing happening. Saudi Arabia and the Israelis. Hey, man. Peace. Shalom. Ah, what's up? Why is that? The Saudis never signed a peace agreement with the Israelis. Why is that? What do you think it has to do with? You think it has to do with oil? Water rights? Shipping lanes? Vacation spots? It's also very odd. Also very odd. Oh, and Joe Biden, after he had his hamburger today, it was today, either yesterday or today, he made a trip to the AIPAC convention. And according to the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, Biden pressed Israel today to support a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. See, Obama's sending out signals that, you know, hey, I am not, you know, the Redeemer does not talk to me and tell me to invade different states. And, you know, my middle name is Hussein. And as the right wing will tell you in this country, I am a secret closeted Muslim. So Obama is getting word to the Israelis, to Netanyahu. What a time to have Obama over here and Netanyahu over there. Oh, my God. But Obama's getting the word out. Biden told the AIPAC committee or the AIPAC convention, quote, Israel has to work for a two-state solution. You're not going to like my saying this, but not build more settlements, dismantle existing outposts, and allow Palestinians freedom of movement and access to equal opportunity, end quote, or economic opportunity, end quote. That's what Biden told the AIPAC convention. And when the laughter died down, everybody went to lunch.
Come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. All right, I've got a plea bargain on this one now because I will certainly admit to saying it ass backwards, but I did know, I really did, that was Iraq was claiming that Kuwait was doing the slant drilling into Iraq. But just a complete brain fart, Marty and Michael... Marty in Sacramento and Michael in Roswell. Michael writes, actually, it was Kuwait that was slant drilling into fields in southern Iraq, and this upset Hussein because at the same time, Iraq's oil production hadn't completely recovered from the Iran-Iraq war, and Kuwait was demanding repayment of loans made to Iraq during that war. So Hussein perceived the situation as Kuwait stealing the resources he needed to repay the debt. Mike also says, so being the thug that he was, he sent a dilapidated army to invade Kuwait, which didn't have much of a military at all. And then Marty says, I believe you misspoke about who slant drilled into where. If memory serves, Iraq was claiming that Kuwait was doing the slant drilling into Iraq. Funny how Bush the first went from not caring to escalating the issue to an invasion. Was Iraq set up? I'll bet all the paper groundwork got evacuated by either Ali North or Foreign Hall. Remember her? Anyway, thanks, guys. Yeah, and again, like I said, I always claim my ignorance. But this one, I've got a plea bargain with y'all. I knew that. I don't know why it came out the way it came out. Ah! But thanks. Thanks for the correction. I do appreciate it. Always do. I'm surprised Reg didn't write in. I've got a cadre of enforcers out there who... And bless their hearts for it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Back to Biden. There's not too much to add here. White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel, I believe it was either he or his father. I'll get a clarification on this too. Who served in the Israeli military. Maybe it was both. Rahm Emanuel told AIPAC delegates last night that two states for two people is the only solution the United States is committed to. Well, for obvious reasons, if you have one state, then Israel is no longer Jewish. It becomes something else because one state, with the right of return that the Palestinians are demanding, right of return to take care of their own diaspora, at that point, Israel loses its Jewishness and becomes just another Middle Eastern country. So the idea of one state is long gone, and will remain gone. The idea of two states, as George Bush said, living side by side in, what did he say? In peace and insecurity. Right. I don't know. The damage that has been done, in this sad, bleeding part of the world is probably irreparable, no matter how you look at it. But anyway, Rahm Emanuel said relations between Israel and the United States are unbreakable. And he added that, quote, this is a moment of truth for Israel and the Palestinians. He also added that Iran is the number one threat to the Middle East. And he noted that it is hard to make progress wherever Tehran is involved in the Middle East. Really? Is that the truth? Is that the truth? Iran's the number one threat to the Middle East. See, I would disagree with that. I would honestly and truthfully say, no, I wouldn't say Israel. I would say the number one threat to the Middle East is the United States. Well, sure. We have not been honest brokers in the Middle East. We never have. Who doesn't know? Well, we don't know that. See, here in the United States, we don't know that. The British know it. The French know it. The Canadians know it. Certainly the Arab world knows it. The Israelis know it. South Americans know it. The Chinese know it and fully exploit it. But the only people who don't seem to get this are Americans. And that's probably because of the, out of proportion power that lobbying groups like AIPAC have in presenting Israel's story. When and where do you hear a fair representation of the story told by the Palestinians? Now, every once in a while, New York Times will publish something. It's usually a story of abject poverty and the abuse of Palestinians by the Israelis. And usually these stories in the Times are carry with them photographs, and it's very touching and very moving. And then, of course, it goes on. It doesn't talk about, the New York Times very seldom, if ever, talks about the political necessity of listening to the Palestinians. They don't talk about the efforts by the United States and Israel over the past 60 years to deny the Palestinians a cohesive government, a government of respect, a government that truly represents the Palestinian people. And when elections are held and the results turn out to be what they turned out to be when Hamas came to power, then all of a sudden democracy is not such a good idea, certainly not for the Palestinians. So the biggest threat to peace in the Middle East is and has been the United States. If you disagree with that, I don't think you understand Middle Eastern history. And if you are an AIPAC supporter or a Likudnik, please don't write to me. I don't want to get into it. Don't start chanting the same tired, old, worn-out arguments. I've heard them for 20 years. I'm just not the least bit interested in hearing them regarding the terrible things the Palestinians have done to the Israelis. Stop. I don't want to hear it. I just don't want to hear it. But anyone who wants to involve, you know, just by sticking your toe into the truth, please understand that the biggest threat to peace in the Middle East has been and always will be us, the United States of America. We'll be back after the break, and we're going to take your phone calls. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Shining down upon me now, feel alive. This is the time, so it's a good day. You wanna show up?
is 7 past the hour. Welcome back to the Malloy Program. About a half an hour, we're going to replay Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe for you in case you missed it the first time. The number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to phone in. I suggested that before the break, and I guess I've pissed everybody off tonight. So no one wants to call. Okay, all right. Well, that's all right. I can appreciate that. If I listened to this program, I would probably be in a constant state of being pissed off too. We have something that came in. When did this come in? This is a couple of days ago from Paul. And I never got a chance to share this with you, which I'm going to do right now. Paul writes, "Hello, Mike. I agree with your understanding that Republicans are playing with less than a full deck of cards. It is biology. It's their biology, which may be why they do not accept the science or any science. Here's something to ponder. Why do Republicans have such a difficult time being American? They represent multinational corporations, not human beings, let alone Americans. Corporations that need to ruin your environment just to stay viable. Corporations that rape and pillage local neighborhoods, pollute the air, and do caca in the water. Why do Republicans have such a difficult time being American? Well, the Republicans represent the rich who do not want to pay taxes, do not want to pay their fair share. They would rather pay some offshore banker dues than pay for our schools. Do they not realize it is taxes that pay for government and that it is good government that leads to civilization? Do we really see why they want to support members of Congress who, quote, want to make government so small they could drown it in a bathtub? Is it because the machine they back wants to go all the way back to the dark ages of feudalism? Republicans do not want civilization where everyone else has a decent chance. They want anarchy, for without a government, there is only anarchy, even though they preach law and order and complain of anarchists. That is how hypocritical they are. Why do Republicans have such a difficult time being American? Most favor religious ties rather than American law. It's time to make every church pay taxes just like any other business franchise. Why do Republicans have such a difficult time being American? They are anti-environmental. They are against protecting the environment, against keeping your water clean, the air you breathe, as if there are jobs on a dead planet. Their pundits will tell them that anyone working to keep the air clean and the forest sustainable is the enemy. Why do Republicans have such a difficult time being American? They are against worker safety on the job. They're against human rights, women's rights, equal rights. They're against everyone's rights but their own to be lazy parasites. Put the bastards to work and see how they like it. Why do Republicans have such a difficult time being American? And you get the point. Paul goes on. He adds towards the end, here in California, they have fought the budget year after year, blackmailing the legislature to get their backward-facing agenda into legislation. Back during the Clinton years, who stopped our government several times, the Republicans accomplished a task that only our enemies would like to see. Why do Republicans have such a difficult time being American? Because of health care, food safety, equal schooling? Save the bankers. All the best, Paul. I appreciate your writing, Paul. I've never been able to figure that one out either. They want to be here, but they don't want to do the things necessary to make here here. I guess that's it. Some phone callers. Okay, Tim is calling from Detroit, listening on XM. Hey, Tim.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Listened to you for ever since I got XM in 05, and it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Wow, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate great. That.
Probably one of the most informative people on radio, even though you say it's just sort of a fireside chat.
well, thanks.
You know, I've been a pretty big supporter of the president, you know, President Obama.
Sure.
Pretty much since 06. I even liked some of his early speeches on the environment and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm greatly disappointed, and I'm thinking I'm even withdrawing support from him. I mean, this country is ostensibly supposed to be built on law, on following the Geneva Convention against torture. We fought World War II against the fascists. It was supposedly for democracy. I mean, I understand there were other extenuating circumstances.
Right.
And I'm at the point now where I'm just lost. I don't know who to support anymore. I feel like a person in the wilderness. I mean, I'm an American citizen. I was born in Athens, Greece. I came here with my parents when I was five. And I believed everything I was taught in school, you know, that the Constitution is important, that the torture is wrong, that America is supposed to stand for the little guy. And I see that sliding out. You know, year after year, you know, we have bank bailouts. We have the auto industry being destroyed. We have the environment being destroyed. We have the Democrats knuckling under. And, of course, the Republicans are absolute nuts. And I'm just, I'm at the end of my rope, in a sense. I just don't know what to do politically.
Well, I certainly understand what you're saying, Tim. Those of us who are native-born were brought up with the same stuff that you learned, of course. I started school in the United States about the same time you started school in the United States. And, of course, I was born here, and you came here. So you and I probably got and did you get your education in Detroit? Is that where you
yeah,
moved?
Yeah, actually, Lincoln Park.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, I'm real familiar. I'm from Toledo. So we probably had basically the same kind of education if you factor in the difference in our ages. I'm probably considerably older than you. But it was the same basic story. I have a listener in San Francisco, Kay, who teaches American history and government, and she's having a hell of a time teaching her students because she's aware of what's going on. How do you teach that we are respecters of and writers of international law when that's no longer the truth? We don't respect international law, as you point out. We don't adhere to it, as you point out. So I don't know. It is a mystery. There's a couple ways to handle the dilemma that you've got. And I think about this too. So, one way to handle the dilemma is just to drop out. I mean, drop out politically, drop out from the worry and the concern, enjoy one's family, do the things that a person does.
And the one's garden is the one.
Yeah, yeah, just, you know, just kind of rock and roll with whatever garbage tidal wave is coming out of Washington next, and just hope that, you know, the bombs don't start falling or the viruses don't start attacking, and just live a life. That's one way to do it. Another way to do it, now I don't know how satisfying that is to people who think. Obviously to you it would probably be not very satisfying at all. It's not very satisfying of me to think about that. On the other hand, how much time do you and I have left? You know, we don't know. That's the big mystery. So what do we want to do? Do we want to think about all this stuff that's going on? You know, if we ever sat down, Tim, and really, you know, just sit there and do kind of a Zen thing and clear the mind and allow into your mind, after it's been cleared, allow in all of the stuff that's out there in the world that causes pain and grief and anguish, you know, we retain our sanity for about 3 seconds after allowing that in and go instantly mad, never to return. So that's not a good idea. Another way to do it is not drop out, but just to realize how impotent and powerless we are and talk about it, try to remove ourselves from it, look at it, find humor, even though it's dark humor. A third way is to say, no, I'm not going to drop out, and I'm not going to remove myself and laugh at it. I'm going to become an activist. Now, if you become an activist, I think you have to be willing to really commit just about everything you have, your energy, your purse, your soul, your heart, however you define those terms, and go for it with no guarantee whatsoever that anything will ever come of your efforts. So I don't know. There may be a fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh choice, Tim, but that's about the best I can do. You know what I'm saying?
Well, thanks for talking about it.
Sure, and I'll bet you've already come to those conclusions on your own because you sound like a smart guy, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this stuff out. Not if you know, have basic intelligence. Too bad Republicans don't. Thanks, Tim. I'm glad you called in, man.
Thank you.
21 past the hour. Linda is calling from Buffalo, New York, listening, well, I'm not sure how, XM or online? Linda?
Yes, I'm listening online right now.
So oh, good.
I'll plug in my XM and I'll be listening there too.
Oh, great.
And I just want to call and let you know that I really appreciate and agree with your take on the Israeli situation. There's two issues that I really agree with you on, that I enjoy listening to you talk about, and you inform me very well. And that issue is the Israeli issue and the African American issues. You are just so close to my feelings on these two major issues.
Hmm.
You know that I really enjoy listening to your show, and you always say something informative, and you always I agree with you.
Well, Linda, that's very nice. I appreciate you saying that.
And I really enjoy hearing your show because you always have something, informative and good to say.
Well, spread the word.
And I'm also concerned about the healthcare thing.
Yes.
And, of course, the torture issue. Those two things, I enjoy you keeping me up on those.
Well, what I have found, because Linda, my attitudes and tastes and curiosities are pretty pedestrian. I'm not on either end of intellectual spectrum. I'm not real bright and I'm not real stupid. What I have found is that most of the things I'm interested in or that get my attention also are of interest and get the attention of other people who like me are, somewhere in that kind of average range where we're concerned, we don't know what the hell to do. Like I said, we're not stupid. We want to believe in our country. We want to believe in our political systems. But we take a look at the history of both and just kind of freak a little bit. So that's one of the reasons why when we first started doing this program, we made it very clear that if you're a listener, you're looking for answers here. There won't be any. We don't have it because we don't have any. It's just all questions. And I think what you're keying into when you listen to this program, are the same questions that we have. Because there aren't any answers to this stuff. How do you reconcile, the Israeli-Palestinian issue? It can't be done. The Palestinians would like the Jews to leave. The Israelis would like the Palestinians to leave. There's no compromise there. There's no, and on and on. So I think one of the things that a lot of people find, and maybe you also, Linda, that find appealing about this program is that you know that when you come here, you'll hear the same from me and from the callers, from the other callers. I don't think anyone presents themselves on this program as having answers. We're all seekers and like that. But I appreciate the kind words. It's nice to hear that there are kindred souls out there who have the same questions. Quick email here. Reg writes, is it possible, this is about Spain and torture, is it possible that the escape hatch for Obama is the Spanish justice system? You reported earlier that the Spanish judge was waiting to hear whether or not the U.S. would prosecute those involved in the torture of detainees. Since they're unwilling to proceed, if the U.S. chose to prosecute, perhaps the refusal of the U.S. Justice Department to go any further is a way to give the Spanish courts the go-ahead. This would keep Obama above the fray and possibly prevent the chaos that might accompany a similar prosecution here. A trial in Spain would reveal the truth even more accurately than it would be in the United States itself. This may be a naive perspective, but I'm desperate enough to look for any rationale around. Jesus, Reg, I hear you. Yeah. RB is calling from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. Hey, RB.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I didn't know until today that a farm worker came back from Mexico, a human, and infected a whole... what do you call a bunch of swine? A herd? No, you don't call it a herd. What the hell?
Yeah, I heard that too, but that's really hard to believe because most experts say it's impossible for a human to transmit it to pigs.
Bah, but that's the deal, you see.
Well, that's a nice way of, panicking people again, because when you look at that virus, the reason they stopped calling it the swine flu virus and H1N1 is because it's a hybrid. It's a hybrid flu virus.
Well, right, right. But
one English scientist, the head of their, national medicine, they have a program there. But he said that it's impossible for that to have happened unless it was created in a lab and somehow got out.
Well, I don't agree with that, RB, and I'll tell you why. I'm certainly not a biologist. And oh, wait a minute, I got to do a break here. Let me put you on hold. I'll come right back. I got to put you on hold for a second though. The clock got a little ahead of us here. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Listen to the radio, listen to the radio, radio. Ever wondering what's to come of me? I got a 008 Dean Martin guitar in the backseat of the car. Hey, I am leaving Mississippi with the radio on. 'Cause when you can't find a friend, you still got the radio. When you can't find a friend, you still got the radio. The radio.
Liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Oh, yeah, that makes him dangerous. All right, it's 25 before the hour. We're talking with RB in Saskatoon. Go ahead, RB.
Hey there, Mike.
Hey.
So, yeah, you were talking about how that was transmitted, and I sent you an article by Michelle Chazadowski at globalresearch.ca.
Right.
And he says, it's funny that how nobody's mentioning through all this the horrible, unsanitary conditions these factory farms that these pigs are raised in.
Well, I think there has been a lot of attention paid to that.
Well, not in Canada and the United States.
Well, no, in the U.S., oh, yeah. I don't know about Canada.
Well, here in Canada, it's the Mexican came up here and infected our pigs.
No, there's been a series of articles about Swift and Company and their North Carolina factory farms, their Iowa factory farms. I think most people understand that those are just enormous pig excrement petri dishes. And
the pigs are always getting a bad name. And actually, in the wild, they're not that bad.
They're like
if you were thrown into a, you know, into a little cubicle,
sure,
not allowed to use the bathroom, where would you poop?
Well, that's true. And it becomes, like I said, just an enormous petri dish where all sorts of viruses and things start to grow and mutate. And then remember, it's pig farmers in China or Southeast Asia that first contracted swine flu. It's not that difficult with pigs that have it to transmit it to humans. And once the virus is inside a human, if I'm understanding all this properly, the virus is going to do everything it can to ensure its survival. It's going to replicate, and it may start borrowing genes. Viruses are not that complex. Some people argue they're not really alive. They're doing something else. They're mobile and they're dangerous, but they're not really alive. Sounds like Dick Cheney. So, I'm not sure.
But I was also wondering, because I remember 6 years ago, those scientists for the World Health Organization went up to Greenland, I do believe, and dug up some corpses that had died in 1918 from the Spanish influenza to, I don't know, learn how to. They were going to reactivate it and then play with it or something. I don't know. And at the time, I was just going, well, why would you do that? Just leave it there.
It was a horrible thing
that happened.
Right. Well, I think, the old saying, RB, let sleeping dogs lie. RB, I got a boogie. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. We'll talk again. I had promised a replay here of the latest edition of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. We're going to do that for you now. This is written and produced by Bob Alexander and presented by the Mike Malloy Mighty Radio Players.
It's time once again for Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. Tonight's episode, The Fortress of Fox, or The Big Surreal.
Hey, True Seekers. Kathy and I had just wrapped up another Mike Malloy Uncensored Mailbag. Never fails to amaze me how these troglodytes manage to misspell words consisting of one syllable. Kathy was rewinding the tape when there was a knock at the door.
Expecting anybody?
Cut the theme music, baby. You're a regular now, and yeah, I got a call earlier today from my snitch at Fox News. He said he couldn't talk about it over the phone, so he was going to drop by. I went over and opened the studio door. My contact was standing there, but not for long. He fell face down onto the floor. I felt for a pulse. I didn't expect to find one. I wasn't disappointed.
Ah, Mike, is he?
Yeah. Dead on arrival.
Who is he?
Elijah Cook Jr. And outside of the Maltese Falcon, I can't remember a movie where he made it alive to the last reel. Poor sap.
What's that paper in his hand?
Let me see. It's a note to me. Malloy, if you're reading this, I'm already dead. Because of budgetary constraints, I don't have any lines. So the only way I can tell you anything is through this crudely done expositional passage. If only more truth seekers would subscribe to your podcasts for only $59.40 a year, which is about 25 cents a show, I might be alive today.
Skip the commercial part. Even though the podcasts are commercial free, what else did he say?
Well, I'm getting to it here. This evening, there'll be a meeting of all the affiliates at Fox headquarters where next month's Republican talking points will be distributed. The lists are in Roger Ailes' office. If you can get them before the indoctrination film ends, you'll be able to... You'll be able...
What?
You'll...
What?
He croaked before he could finish there, Kathy.
Well, shouldn't we call the police?
No time for that, baby. We've got to get down to Fox headquarters and stop them before they release those talking points. Because without them, these jokers won't be able to fill their airtime. Well, with the exception of Glenn Beck, they just spin him around like a top and turn the camera on.
Well, this could be dangerous.
Danger's my middle name, dollface.
I thought it was Dennis, but how will we get in?
Easy. I'll disguise myself as an idiot, so we'll fit right in. Kathy grabbed the keys. I put on the rubber nose, squirting lapel flour and the really big clown shoes. We drove over to Fox headquarters, parked, and walked right on in. No problem. My disguise worked perfectly. We blended in with the other clowns. Almost immediately, we were ushered into a large screening room.
Welcome to the testing room of the Parallax
Corporation's
Division of Human
Engineering. Once a month, baby, they re-indoctrinate the affiliates and all Fox employees to keep them on the party line. Mind control, tinfoil hat stuff.
I've always wondered about that. Shiny side in or out?
Shiny side out, always. Quilt it if you can get it. As soon as they dim the lights, we'll get out of here.
Pleasant experience.
We slipped out the door and made our way to Roger Ailes' office, and there, sitting on the desk blotter, were the Republican talking points.
I don't understand. If we take these, why don't they just write them up again?
Well, look at it this way, baby. While most of these people can barely read their teleprompters, none of them can write. They have to wait for Cheney to come out of his bunker, and he does that only once a month during the full moon. Without these talking points, they'll be forced to keep yakking about teabagging until the middle of the summer.
Mike, the door.
Just then, Roger Ailes came into the room. He took one look at us and bellowed in rage. I knew it! I've read about these reptilian shapeshifters. Kathy, get behind me! As Ailes rushed towards us, I distracted him by throwing my clown shoes at him. We barely made it out the door. As we passed the screening room, the Fox employees stumbled out and slowly lurched after us. We easily outran the zombies and jumped in the car. We raced off into the night. Anybody tailing us, baby?
Not yet. Wait, a helicopter's coming straight for us.
Good God, it's Sarah Palin.
Eat hot dirt, don't you?
Mike, look out for the fruit cart.
Why is it always a fruit cart?
Mike, you're hit.
A black hole opened up and I dived in headfirst. Yada yada, Stephen Hawking, yada yada yada. But I had other things on my mind, like, this really hurts. I came to in a strange, sepia-tinted room. Where am I? What? Then I saw them. There at the foot of the bed were Ray Bolger, Jack Haley, and Bert Lahr.
Remember me? Your old pal Hunk?
Me? Hickory? You couldn't forget my face, could you?
Let me out of here! Let me out of here!
Eat hot lead, don't you?
Die, die, die!
Mike.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
Mike, wake up, Mike.
What?
You were having a nightmare.
It was all a dream?
You were making so much noise you woke up the dog.
The dog? We don't have a dog.
Well, of course we have a dog. What are you talking about? Here, Asta. Come here, boy.
Asta?
Be sure to tune in again next time when Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe, returns from a parallel universe in Death in the Land of the Midnight Sun.
All right, Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, produced and written by Bob Alexander, presented by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players, with a cast of just all kinds of people. We'll put the. Do we put this at the website? We do, don't we? Yeah, we'll post it. We'll get this to our genius webmaster and have it put up there so you can play with it if you would like. Alex is calling from Austin, Texas, listening on XM. Hey, Alex.
Hey, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Okay. Unfortunately, I'm just getting home from work, so that's not, you know.
I hear you.
I can listen to you, but it's, you know, 11 o'clock, so.
I hear that loud and clear.
So I guess I was calling because you were asking about Republicans, and I thought, you know, I think somewhere, you know, the reason that Republicans are the way they are is because somewhere deep down they kind of believe that social Darwinism, you know, Darwinism, which mm-hmm. is kind of ironic
mm-hmm.
because they're also against evolution, but that seems to be the only thing they believe in.
Yeah.
That,
and
you know, if you don't, you know.
Yeah. Another term for that, of course, is feudalism, or in this yes. country it was called slavery. And I believe you're right. I believe that's what Republicans are all about. It's laughable every time I hear them, talk about opening up a big tent for Republicans. In the first place, they would never allow a big tent kind of attitude. And secondly, who in the hell wants to go there?
Not me.
No, I hear you. And as far as, so-called minorities, which means, in the vernacular, it means everybody except white males, who cares about what the Republicans have to offer? There's no there. It's just awful. Hey, got a break here, Alex. Listen, thank you. Appreciate you checking in, and I hope you'll call again. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. It's about 9 before the hour. Thanks to the crew again tonight. Ben Birch is our technical director. Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Bruce Enberg, our economic affairs correspondent. Ethical advisors to the program, Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. And engineered and produced by Catherine Bay. The Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe segment, written and produced by Bob Alexander. Ben is calling from Bueno Park, California.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
This is Ben from Bueno Park, California. This catty corner from Knott's Berry Farm.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was quite amusing. And by the way, I also wanted to let you know this is Ben who was drawn down. The police drew down on me when I was driving around the orange traffic circle with burning sage. Remember that?
Yeah, well, it's quite a story. Yeah, I do, Ben.
Yeah, well, now the question I have is that I every once in a while I listen to, you know, right-wing radio to get a sense of what the right wing is talking about. And they came up with an interesting observation.
Yeah.
And they talked about these businesses that go offshore so they can shelter their tax liability.
Right.
They say it was Kevin McCulloch. It's apparently Kevin McCulloch has gone with Kevin Bacon or somebody or his brother and the deal was that he said that businesses don't pay taxes. It's the people who buy the services or products of those businesses that pay the taxes. And I thought, that's not right. I have to ask Mike. What are the businesses paying?
Well, businesses are supposed to. A tax on profits, of course. It always has been that way. I mean, somebody can make an argument that taxes are all bad, and the person who make that argument is somebody that belongs inside an asylum. The organizing principles around which societies are formed have to do with community efforts like, oh, I don't know, let's think of a few, libraries, police departments, water departments, sanitation departments, fire departments, a military, public schools, help for the aged, help for the sick, a public health system, inoculation programs, highways, bridges, roads. You see, all of that stuff is necessary to civilization. And regardless of what the right-wingers say, there is no civilization fairy that comes down and builds all that stuff and says, okay, here you are. It takes money. Now, how do we get the money to do it? Well, back in the day, the king would provide all the money, only it wasn't very good money because the people would live in slop and slime while the king lived a pretty good life considering the times. So then they came up with the idea of people actually having a say in how they were going to live so that they could live beyond the age of 35 and they wouldn't be eaten up with tuberculosis when they were 37 and so on and so forth. So all of this stuff came together and it was called government. And government is good. Government can get out of control and become like George W. Bush or Adolf Hitler or Mao Zedong. Then it's not good. But when it is used as an organizing principle to further education, art, history, poetry, manufacturing, a standard of living, public health, then government is good. Now, Republicans don't get that because Republicans are dumber than a sack full of goat droppings.
But on this one point, businesses pay taxes. You're telling me then that businesses do pay tax on their profits.
Oh, yeah, of course they do.
Of the profits for businesses. And by the way, with that, I wanted to point out to you something that Tom Hartman said today that was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
He doesn't know who the quote came from, but it was, taxes are the cost of admission to a civil society.
Yeah, well, that was me. That was mine. And I've told Hartman before many times, you know, don't use that, Tom, unless you attribute it to me. Thanks, Ben. I appreciate what you had to say. I really do. Noel is driving in Nevada, listening on Sirius. Hey, Noel.
Yeah, hi. How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right.
I wanted to talk to you about that Palestinian and Israeli issue and United States relationship before the creation of Israel. It was great with the Arab world. After the creation of Israel, 1948, in the homeland of Palestine people, that's when the problem started. And one of the main problems is with the 9/11 also comes from the United States supporting Israel 100% and turning the blind eye all the things that Israel done to Palestinians, keep them 60 years in the concentration camps. And, we're going all over the world fighting for freedom of other countries. But when it comes to the Palestinian people, we just turn the blind eye.
Well, I hear you loud and clear, Noel. I really do. It's an issue that I've talked about so many times in the past 24 years that I've been on radio, and I'll continue to talk about it. But you know what? We're down to seconds here on the program tonight. So, no offense intended here. I will talk about that subject or that topic any time. But we're just flat out of time, pal. So, thanks for bringing it up and thanks for listening. I appreciate it, Noel. All right. Deep breath. Have a nice glass of Merlot and I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.